We're back. We're talking with Lisa Lowton. Sorry, Lisa, how do you say your last name? Lutan?
It's Lutan. Okay, thanks Lutan. For asking.
Okay, sorry. I make a mess of it. You've written a book called Busy Stress and Food Obsessed. We're talking before the break about your personal story and how really, you know, you just continue to go until your body shut down. What do you have to suggest to people who are maybe going through similar events in their life? Maybe they're on the, you know, they're stressed. Maybe they're, you know, they're fatigued and they're run down. What do you work with your clients, and what do you talk about in the book that really helps people move forward?
Well, I think that there's many things with that. And number one, I would say the most important thing is slow down and breathe. And it sounds like such an obvious thing. We hear it all the time, but we don't do it. And I have many people that I might say, oh, I think you should start a meditation practice. And they would go, no, I could never sit still. My brain is too crazy. I could never do that. So we take the approach, let's just start with a minute. Let's just take 1 minute. And we could do it once a day. We could do it a couple of times a day. And just taking a minute, maybe close your eyes, maybe not, and just slowing down your breathing is so beneficial to your body. And it's the type of thing that I like to attach a new habit onto an existing habit. So let's say you have a cup of coffee every day in the morning. Say, every day I'm going to have a cup of coffee, and while I'm having my coffee, I'm going to just breathe. Just close my eyes and deep breathing for a minute. Or if you're driving to work, every time you come to a red light, just start doing some slow breathing. And when people get into that, then we move to 2 minutes. And, you know, if they're interested, some people are fine with that, and that does so much. And other people move to 2 minutes or 5 minutes, and then they might actually develop a meditation practice that works for them. But slowing down our minds, slowing down our bodies, I think that is the number one thing that we need to do for our health right now. And some other benefits of that are when we can slow down and pause, we make better choices, even when it comes to food. Okay, we can say, instead of just running to that refrigerator and grabbing what's ever there, we can say, wow, what am I hungry for? Am I even hungry? You know, we take that pause, that breath, and go, maybe I'm not even hungry at all. Maybe I need a nap. Or maybe I need a break. And so many people use food as a break because our culture doesn't allow us to say, I need a break, I need to go meditate, I need to go take a nap, I need to go call a friend during the workday. But it does allow us to go take a snack. And so many of us have gotten in that habit of the only break we give ourselves is to go eat. So taking that pause and really understanding what's going on, that is one of the best tips I can give you.
What I like about your book is that you're encouraging people to really investigate for themselves. You know, what are the driving forces in their life that are really causing them to be perhaps out of control or stressed? And that the relationship between that and food. What is the relationship between stress and food?
Well, it's different things for different people. And I think that for many of us, as I said before, food will fill a void. And so if we're not having enough fun in our life, we might just turn to food. If we're not having enough love in our life, we're going to turn to food. If we're not taking breaks, like I said before, that, you know, just to clear our head, we might turn to food. And so when we're running around busy and stressed, we're not listening to what our body is saying. And when we don't listen, we don't really know for sure what's going on. So I would say that's the biggest thing right there that I see, is that most people don't even think about it. Oh, I'm going to grab a bar. I'm going to eat it in the car. I'm going to grab something from the vending machine because it's easy, it's fast, it's quick. It doesn't slow down that blah, blah, blah. You know, understand? But when we can slow down, eat a little more slowly, we actually get pleasure from our food. We might actually notice that healthy food makes our bodies feel better than non-healthy food. And when we start eating healthier, it actually affects our mood, which makes us feel better, which can eliminate stress. So it's a cycle. It's not just a one-way thing. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. You talk in your book about how one girl's cupcake is another girl's crack cocaine. Do you want to talk about that relationship?
Yeah, so sugar. Sugar has always been a really big struggle for me, and I write about sugar all the time. And the article, I originally wrote an article, and then it became a chapter in the book. Just so many people really resonated with it, because many times we're told, oh, just have a bite, you know, have one piece of dark chocolate each night. But for someone like me, if I eat one piece of dark chocolate, I'm going to keep going back until I eat most of the bar. And I think that many people are in the same boat with that, that it's not just, it's not a willpower thing. It's like cocaine. It gets in our blood system, and we just can't stop. And so, again, you have to understand yourself and know yourself, and then you can set a strategy around that. And some people, it might mean stop eating sugar. Some people, it might mean only eat it once in a while. And so when you can understand yourself as an eater, you don't beat yourself up. Like, this is not your fault. This is a biological thing happening in your body. And it happens to many, many, many people. So then, well, what can we do about it? And it's a whole different way of looking at food and looking at yourself. We're so hard on ourselves.
Lisa, tell me a little bit more about, you know, being hard on ourselves, because you talk about that a fair bit in the book. You talk about ditching your inner critic bitch. You know, you talk about language and the weight scale and the bathroom scale. What's going on with people?
I think that we're really trying so hard to be perfect, and that when we are not perfect, we think it's our fault, and we do beat ourselves up. I mean, how many women or men get on the scale, and if it's a good number, they're psyched, and if it's a bad number, they're depressed? And when we pull ourselves out of that and go, wow, I'm basing my day on a number, it sounds ludicrous, but we do it. Because we live in this society that we're supposed to look a certain way, we're supposed to weigh a certain thing, and we can't live up to it. We're just constantly falling short in so many areas, so we beat ourselves up. And that inner critic bitch is that voice in our head that is constantly telling us, you know, you need to work out harder, you need to eat better, you need to do this. And yeah, we do. Some of us do, some of us don't. But we can do it in a nice way. We don't have to do it in a mean way to ourselves. We can do it out of love and self-compassion. I care enough about myself that I want to take care of myself. I care enough about my family, so I want to be the healthiest person I can be. The same, just doing it from a different angle is so much more supportive to yourself and to the world than you're not good enough. You know, that whole no pain, no gain tactic. It's terrifying, and it doesn't really work, in the long run at least. It might work in the short run, but then we're going to feel deprived, and we're going to go right back to what we were doing before because we can't maintain it.
Tell us what a breakdown looks like for people.
A breakdown. I'm sorry?
A breakdown. You know, what happens when we realize that we just can't go on anymore? How does that look like for people, and how can they determine if that's what's happening to them?
Well, I think it is going to vary quite a bit with different people, but I think, you know, the fatigue and probably, you know, mild depression. In my case, I had this event that felt like a stroke. You know, other people, it might not be so dramatic, but you really want to start noticing, are you feeling an anxiety all the time? And sometimes, if we stop, we can notice even in our body, like an anxiety might feel like a tightness in the chest, you know, or a gnawing in the stomach, that type of thing. And so again, when we're quiet and we can look at what's going inside, our body is going to give us those clues. But it's really going to manifest. I think the key thing is check in with yourself. Am I okay? And you know when you're not okay. I mean, I had taps and taps and taps of that I'm not okay, and it wasn't until the hammer hit me over the head that I did anything about it. And that's the sad thing, is we don't take action until something really bad happens. We get really sick, you know, or something, we get injured, and then we make changes. But we really want to prevent that. So check in with yourself on a daily basis. How are you? Oh, I'm feeling this tightness. Okay, I'm going to breathe a little bit. You know, breathe into that. And just little things like that will help you so much.
Lisa, what are, you know, you talk about, you talked about it before. You talked about slowing down and breathing. But sometimes that's hard for people. You know, you talked about taking time at stoplights, or what are some of the things that really work? What are some of the tricks that you have experienced?
I mean, I think it's hard to start a new habit. Mm-hmm. Any for any of us, you know, it's always hard. But once you do something like that, it very quickly moves from a have to do to a want to do, and it's training yourself. I had one client, she's a very busy CEO, and she just loved that breathing. She was like, oh my God, that 1 minute has changed my life. And she started bringing it to work and started all of her meetings with 1 minute of breathing before they started. And they found that they were just more focused, everyone was more present, centered, and they had more productive meetings. So you have to take a testing approach. Try it. Try it for a few days. If you like it, keep it. If you don't keep it. But most people really like it, you know, but they don't think of it. So I would just say all of this is an experiment. You know, all I can do is offer things on a platter for people to try, and they can take it or leave it. But if you're determined to make changes in your life and you don't have more than a minute, what have you got to lose?
Hmm. Lisa, you know, when you're working with clients and you're moving them forward, how long does change take?
Well, it really varies again. So one of the programs I run, I like people to investigate how food and how stress and how things affect their body. So I have a few programs that I run for a week where people give up gluten, dairy, soy, sugar, and alcohol just for a week, just to experiment and see how they feel without those foods. Not because I say this is the way they should eat, but just also just to understand what's going on in their body. And they are shocked within a week that they feel so different, like shocked. And I've run this for hundreds and hundreds of people, and I get the same things all the time, like shocked. It was so much easier. I feel so much better. Now what's different is how they feel better. Like some people might feel less bloated. Some people might feel more clear-headed. Some people might feel calm. But everyone has really big changes. Then what we do is we bring back foods in one at a time, and we can pinpoint what was the food that was causing that particular thing. So literally within days or a week, you can make changes. The question is, are you going to stick with them? And that my theory is if they feel good, you're going to stick with them. And if they feel bad, you're not, right? We are drawn to things that make us feel good. And what people are shocked to find is when they start eating healthier, they feel really good. And it's not about deprivation. It's about feeling, wanting to feel good. You know, when I take sugar out of my body, I don't get into that, I can't have sugar. I go, wow, like I'm a happier person. I'm not worrying as much. And that's why I don't eat sugar, not because of the calories, but because mentally healthy, I feel more mentally healthy when I'm not eating sugar. And that's a no-brainer. So when I do eat sugar at time to time, I go, oh, yeah, this is why I gave it up. It made me feel like crap. So that's the whole goal, is take this time and experiment, and you'll be shocked at how much easier it is to do this stuff when you come at it from the right angle.
Lisa, we only have about a minute left. This is your time to pump your book, tell people where they can get it and why they should pick it up.
Oh, great. Well, my book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, you can find it on Amazon.com. I really recommend it. The feedback has been great. I share my best strategies and tips so that you can have a better relationship with food and learn how to calm down and relax about it. And you can visit my website at www.healthyhappyandhip.com. I have a newsletter. I share lots of tips. I urge you to visit. Sign up and drop me an email, because I do answer your questions if you take the time to write it.
Thanks, Lisa. It's been great having you.
Thank you so much for for having me, Dave. Take care.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Michael Murray. We're going to be talking about strategies for healthy aging.